Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, June 19th, 2012, Cover Board of Aldermen regular business meeting. We have a lot of business on our agenda tonight, and a couple of topics that I know several people are interested in speaking on. We're going to try and move through this agenda as quickly as we reasonably can while still addressing the material, but I'm going to try and keep the agenda moving here as much as I can.
Mark?
Yes, ma'am.
There were several things that were removed from the agenda for this evening.
Okay.
That.
Yeah, Mr. Manager, could you update the agenda for us?
Sure. Mr. Mayor, members of the board, and also members of the audience, there were some suggested changes to your agenda. Item D1, the presentation by the Chapel Hill Orange County Visitors Bureau, that would be rescheduled to the fall. We're also suggesting that you postpone four items: item D3, appointments to the Greenway Commission; item D7, the land use ordinance text amendment regarding bicycle parking requirements; a follow-up report on locating a triangle transit stop in Carrboro, that's item D8, as well as D9, which is an update on the 2040 long-range transportation plan; and also D5, which is the appointment to the Recreation and Parks Commission; and then adding an item D11, which I've just titled Discussion and Possible Changes to the Agenda for the Carrboro Board of Aldermen Retreat, scheduled for June 23rd, 2012. Mr. Mayor.
The changes to the agenda?
I have a couple comments.
On the proposed changes to the agenda?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. First, I'm not clear why D5 would be moved. Is that something that requires much discussion?
It doesn't require any discussion, so we can keep that.
We can keep D5?
We can keep 5.
Okay.
We'll keep
D5.
Yeah. And my other comment was on the bicycle parking. The way I read the agenda item, it seems like everything we talked about at the last meeting is resolved except for the question of the kinds of bike racks. So my suggestion was going to be that we go ahead and adopt the ordinance and ask for an agenda item in the fall just to discuss the bike racks. So at least we can be moving forward on most of that.
Okay.
Part two, we will leave
D7.
Number 7 on the agenda as well, then? All right. So what we are doing is deferring on items D3, D8, and D9 is the motion.
And D1 has been, I guess, rescheduled.
And D1. Right. All right. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Not passed unanimously. All right. Great. Thanks for that clarification. Okay. One other thing, one or two other housekeeping matters real quick. Chief Crabtree, are you here? Could you come up to the podium for just a second? I just had one or two questions for you. If you stand over at the podium. Chief, I was hoping that you could clarify for the Board of Aldermen and for the residents of the town of Carrboro what exactly the National Fire Academy is.
The National Fire Academy is a worldwide training center up in Maryland. It's the northern part of Maryland near Hagerstown. It's actually located in Emmitsburg, and it's named as the National Emergency Training Center, where police, fire, EMS and trainers from all over emergency services go to be trained in what's considered some of the most elite training that's available for emergency services workers.
Thank you. Now, I wanted you to help me put that in that context, because I have been authorized by the National Fire Academy and the 111th Congress of the United States of America to confer upon Travis Lloyd Crabtree the title of Executive Fire Officer with all honors, privileges, and responsibilities thereunto appertaining.
Thank you, sir.
Congratulations.
Thanks for all you do for us. We're proud of you.
There's only about 3,200 of these across the world, because the National Training National Fire Academy actually trains nationally and internationally. Lots of folks from communities like Trinidad, Guam, all over the world come there to get trained. They can't get in their homeland. So this is quite an honor. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Robin.
All right. We are proud of our entire fire department, and we are especially proud of the leadership and qualifications that Chief Crabtree brings to heading up that department. Thank you, Chief. All right. Is there anyone here to speak on a matter that is not already a part of our printed agenda? I see Hank Elkins is here on a matter not on the agenda. The other folks listed here all seem to be speaking either on, it's Carborough Bicycle Coalition or related to the Claremont South development. Is there anyone else who's here to speak on a matter not on the agenda? Julie, what were you here on?
I wanted to speak the environmental effects of the proposed modification. So
let me address that point in just a moment, because I think that's an let's get to that issue in 1 second. Let me hear from Hank Elkins and then from Steve Deere.
Ask the
Crow will represent. Okay. Excuse me, I see that there. Ask the Crow, it says. That's all right.
I'm not that distinguished. Can I speak? I'm Ask the Crow, and Hank Elkins and I and others have been working along with the Jobs Partnership to remove or ban the box from employment applications. And if you look at the Carborough application, it's at the bottom of the first page. The box that asks, have you ever been convicted of a felony or a misdemeanor? When that's on the employment application, even though it is not supposed to stop an employer from considering an applicant, the application frequently goes straight into the circular file. The petition seeks to broaden the opportunities for homeless in Orange County, many of whom are thwarted to gain gainful employment because they have prior criminal convictions. I'm not going to read the whole thing. You have a copy of the petition. Whereas banning the box could help employers find some of the most eager, highly motivated, well-qualified applicants, these applicants are not considered if they've checked yes to that box. It can cut employers' costs. It helps reduce discrimination in employment because there are far more incarcerated minorities, including African-Americans, than there are whites. It gives autonomy to the employer. It gives them far more discretion on whom they're going to interview. And it does not mean that they will not find out about a criminal background. That will come up in the interview and, of course, in a criminal background check. And banning the box can increase public safety. We have people coming out of prison, people who have criminal convictions way back in their past who can't find jobs, a part of the homeless population because they're being discriminated against for some mistake that they made way back in their past. So we ask that this box be removed from the employment application. Thank you.
So I'd like to move that we refer this to staff for either them to handle it administratively if possible or to bring back an agenda item for us in the future if it's something we need to review, and with the understanding that any change would not apply to the police department.
Is that a motion?
That was a motion.
I'll second that.
Okay. Jackie?
We can have more discussion when staff brings it back. I have very, very, very mixed feelings about that. I understand the police department. We may also look at Rec and Parks. People who are working with children. I don't know.
Look, can I say something in support of? I don't want to drop.
Well, I also know that an awful lot of people spend time in jail who would not be in jail if they weren't poor, because the people with money can afford the attorneys that keep them out of jail, you know, and who get them off and who get the charges dropped. So it's really one of those, you know, again, you know, if you have money, you're fine. I saw this when I was on the grand jury for a year. And if you're poor, then you check the box. But I think we need to look, you know, as we need to look at police, it's not something we step lightly into.
Yeah, my motion, just to be clear, since I didn't go into it in this detail, is really not that we would never find out if someone had a criminal conviction, mm-hmm. but that it wouldn't be on the initial employment application, which might, you know, kind of intimidate someone from wanting to apply, mm-hmm. who otherwise might be an acceptable applicant. So it wouldn't be at that stage. It would be at a subsequent stage. Mm-hmm.
And the motion is to refer to staff to mm-hmm. review.
I think I
trust staff to make
I'm sure they'll be
thorough review.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll consider it carefully.
I'm shocked that just that little box can have such an effect. Some of the things mentioned in here, but from 6% to 60% hired is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a vicious cycle for folks who are coming out of jail to keep them in that position.
I serve on y'all's behalf on the Partnership to End Homelessness board, which this proposal has, I believe, been endorsed by. And we heard some extremely powerful testimony mm-hmm. before us from people who were in this position, who are ex-cons, and. Just about the incredible difficulty of trying to find, you know, trying to find a job washing dishes, trying to find a job,
right,
trying to find a job.
Right.
Anyway, all right. All those in favor of the motion? Oh, yes.
I'm interested in the motion, Dan, excluding the police department, and just curious why?
Well, we already heard from David about that, and you know, I kind of accept his assertion that, you know, it's pretty much a matter of course that anyone applying for a police department position would understand that there would be a background check on such matters. So I don't think the same question arises in that area.
Is that because it's a public safety type position, or
Mr. Mayor, members of the board, we did check. Did a little bit of research in this, and I'll just read this. There's a state-mandated form, F3, from the Criminal Justice Education and Training Standards Commission that is filled out by prospective law enforcement officer applicants, and it's relative to certified positions and a supplemental application. So we do hold law enforcement officers to a different standard, and certainly, I don't know if Desiree is here and could answer that a little better, or perhaps Bob, but at any rate, there is a different standard for law enforcement officers.
Okay. All right. That's fine.
All right. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? The matter passing unanimously. So we'll look at this issue further sometime this fall, presumably. All right. Steve Deer.
Good evening, everybody. Thanks for the opportunity to be here tonight. I'm here representing People of Faith Against the Death Penalty and our several hundred or perhaps over 1,000 members here in Carrboro in our request that the town of Carrboro pass the resolution that we provided for repealing the death penalty in North Carolina and the United States. PFADP is a national group located about two blocks away, and we've been in Carrboro for 11 years. Last night, we had a community forum about the resolution at St. Joseph's CME Church. Had a really good crowd there in terms of diversity. We invited the media and we invited people who opposed a resolution like this to come and talk with us. And nobody who fit that bill was there, but Channel 17 was there, and everybody was in support of it. Mrs. Council, the owner of Mama Dips, told us the story of her father, who had worked to save the life of a man in Chatham County who was executed. And then he tried to get him a dignified burial at Hamlet's Chapel in Pittsburgh. And it just was symbolic to me of what we're up against, really over 400 years of executions in the United States now. And so we have many, many mountains to climb before we would celebrate repeal of the death penalty. Knowing that maybe not everybody in the community supports this, but thinking most people probably do, we hope you will pass the resolution. And in so doing, tonight, you really will serve as an inspiration and a challenge to your peers across North Carolina, because we will carry this message across other town councils and county commissioners, and it will go across the United States. You really will be setting a great message and example for our country, a southern community calling for repealing the death penalty. It's time. Thanks so much. If you have any questions. No.
Thanks, Steve.
All right. Thank you, Steve.
I'll move the resolution, and I'll read the title for the audience and people watching at home. It's called the Resolution to Replace the Death Penalty with Life Imprisonment Without Parole and Use the Savings to Assist Murder Victims' Families and Help Prevent Violent Crime.
A second.
Sure.
I was just going to say, I had an email exchange with Steve that I don't have right in front of me, but it went along the lines that I know this board in the early, I think, 2000s were one of the first boards, or one of the few boards, the first to pass a resolution calling for a moratorium on the death penalty. And so I think this is entirely appropriate.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, passed unanimously. All right. Now, let's get to Julie McClintock's procedural question for a moment. Julie and perhaps others are here to speak to certain aspects of the Claremont South subdivision. We have an agenda item that relates to Claremont South, item D6, but it is the affordable housing review meeting for Claremont South. So I would like to get some reaction from the town attorney about where we're at.
Well, Mayor, the way I understand it, at least, there really hasn't even been an application for the modification submitted yet. Is that correct?
That's planning department.
Has there even been an application filed, Marty, for the amendment or modification?
No application has been filed to date.
Okay.
And why that may be important is, I mean, if it gets to a point where an application is submitted, it's a quasi-judicial process. And the evidence and facts upon which the board is supposed to act in such an application needs to be sworn testimony under oath. We don't even have an application in front of you this evening. I mean, I think that where we're at in the process is discussing the affordable housing aspect of what's already been...
Their present proposal.
The present proposal.
Okay.
I am reluctant to say to the board, go ahead and hear about all these other issues at this stage of the game, only because later on it could prove problematic.
Thank you.
There will be a time for it.
Right. Okay, so this idea of a school being a part of it that's been kicked around in the media and by the developer, you're saying they haven't actually formally requested that yet.
That's the way I understand it.
Right. That's correct.
Okay, and so the appropriate time for this board to hear about the pros or cons of that idea, not just the appropriate time, but really the only time that this board can listen to what the pros or cons of that idea might or might not be, is when we're having a hearing on an application to actually do what the developer has proposed or what has been talked about in the media. And in the meantime, this meeting tonight is supposed to be specific to the issue of affordable housing review. So, I mean, and I guess, you know, it's conceivable to me that some of the environmental issues are in some way related to that, but... I think if it's related to the affordable housing, it's appropriate. Yes.
My concern really is that should the board hear information about some of these other issues this evening, later on in the process, if any of that information becomes part of your decision making process, we have a potential procedural issue for appeal, and right. You know we want to try to avoid that.
Right.
I would rather wait to hear on all the issues until the application comes before us.
Yeah, I agree. There seems to be a conflict here where we're being asked to review something without an application, and yet there's a proposal. Is that what you...
Let me ask one kind of question about the nature of item D6. So when you're doing a residential development and you choose not to meet the town's goal of 15% affordable housing within the development, then there's a mandatory extra hearing that you have to go through. Is that right? And that's what this is.
That's exactly what this is. And the way the ordinance is set up, that has to take place before the formal application may be filed. The intent being that you can have that conversation before they're too far along and the development of their plans.
And one important aspect of that is it is not technically a public hearing, as the term is used as a term of art in the law.
Right.
It's a meeting and a discussion with the board to emphasize or reemphasize the importance of having affordable housing as a component somehow of your development. Whereas a public hearing, especially in a quasi-judicial case, entails an application, there are standards to be applied, and there are standards of evidence and proof and procedure that are supposed to be met in that formal context.
Hmm. It's interesting to note that I feel like this board, you know, essentially already had this discussion with the Zins about this issue, but I guess you're bringing it back because the ordinance so specifically calls for it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Well, let me plow ahead with the agenda as printed, and we will
come back to it soon. Those six people know definitively whether they should stick around or not.
Let me give you a piece of strategic advice. This is not the moment to. This is not the moment to assail Omar Zinn's proposal for the school. This is simply. You know, we're not allowed to consider that issue right now. It isn't before us. We can't decide on it. The issue here for discussion is why Mr. Zinn has chosen not to propose to include the 15% affordable housing component in it.
But isn't that related to the issue?
Well, how, Julie?
Well, he's going to replace some size-limited units with a school.
That issue is not before us because the school is not here. He's having to do this just for the change, just for the change that we've already been talking about for the last several months.
So what will you do tonight?
We'll listen to Mr. Zinn explain what his proposal is with respect to size limited versus affordable housing, and it's an opportunity for us to attempt to persuade him to change his mind if that's what we're interested in doing. However, I'll point out that, as I said, the board actually already had that discussion in an informal way with Mr. Zinn, and actually, as far as I recall, we already voted on that matter. But
right, and it's important for people in the audience, especially those who might be more familiar with Chapel Hill affordable housing regulations, that what Zinn is proposing is entirely within his right under our ordinance. There's no requirement that he build affordable housing rather than size-limited housing. He's only encouraged to do so, and part of the encouragement is the pleasure of meeting with us to discuss the option.
If,
Mr. Mayor?
And part of the incentive for doing the affordable housing is getting out of having to do size restricted, but he's made a business decision to go, you know, to do it the other way.
If I might clarify, the board did have a similar meeting. If my memory is right, the date was December 2010, and for the housing review meeting with the Zins regarding what was ultimately approved in April a few months back. Tonight's meeting is related to the potential major modification application that is forthcoming. That does involve a school, but the residential portion of the project where the school, that end of the site, would change from single-family homes to either townhomes or multifamily homes. So this affordable housing review meeting is related to specifically to that change. So it is required
so it's
in addition to what happened in December 2010.
Sorry, so it's specifically related to affordable housing on which part of the development?
The east end of the...
Closer to Chapel Hill.
That's correct, yes.
I see. So which speaks to Julie's point.
And what staff has been privy to is that it would change from single family to townhomes and or multifamily homes instead.
I'll say... The people who want to speak to issues that are related to the affordable housing, we will hear from, but I would ask people to keep their comments focused on the issue at hand. All right. Agenda item D2 is next, adoption of the fiscal year 2012.
Do we not have this park? Recreation and
park. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, item B1, sorry. Anita, would you join me up here?
She didn't hear you.
Oh. One up.
So, Jackie, that's what it wants to say.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Oh, my gosh.
I know, right?
The best
part of the room. Right here.
At this point,
Gotta love the fighting squid, you know?
Yeah,
don't you
Anita, do you want to introduce your friends? Or shall I read the proclamation first?
I'll read the proclamation. All right. I am issuing a proclamation today. Whereas parks and recreation programs are an integral part of communities throughout this country, including Carrboro, and whereas our parks and recreation activities are vitally important to establishing and maintaining the quality of life in our communities, ensuring the health of all citizens, and contributing to the economic and environmental well-being of a community and region. And whereas parks and recreation programs build healthy, active communities that aid in the prevention of chronic disease, provide therapeutic recreation services for those who are mentally or physically disabled, and also improve the mental and emotional health of all citizens. And whereas parks and recreation programs increase a community's economic prosperity through increased property values, expansion of the local tax base, increased tourism, the attraction and retention of business, and crime reduction. And whereas parks and natural recreation areas improve water quality, protect groundwater, prevent flooding, improve the quality of the air we breathe, provide vegetative buffers to development, and produce habitat for wildlife. And whereas our parks and recreation areas ensure the ecological beauty of our community and provide a place for children and adults to connect with nature and recreate outdoors. And whereas the United States of House of Representatives has designated July as Parks and Recreation Month, and the town of Carrboro recognizes the benefits derived from park and recreation resources. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Mark Chilton, Mayor of the town of Carrboro, North Carolina, do hereby proclaim the month of July 2012 as Parks and Recreation Month in the town of Carrboro, North Carolina, and encourage all citizens to celebrate this occasion. All right.
Good evening. I just want to mention that we're very pleased to have some of our participants in our programs. We have some of our volunteers that work on our boards and commissions, and we have staff. celebrating with us tonight. So thank you for coming.
Thank you all for all that you all do for our community.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Anita. Thank you, Anita.
All right, and then one other item. Seth Lejeunesse and Eric Allman, if you would come up to the podium. Oh, we just have a vote.
I know. Just take a breath. It'll all work out. Do we have to do the consent agenda before that?
Good evening.
Hi.
Hi there. I'm Seth Lejeunesse, and this is my colleague Eric Allman. We're here representing the Carrboro Bicycle Coalition. We're here to talk about two things this evening, and the first one is just for your information, and we just want to one of the things that, upon our inception of the Carrboro Bicycle Coalition, we realized that we needed to work closely with the town and in coordination with the town, so we wanted to keep you abreast of what we're working on. The first one is the Bicycle Friendly Businesses program that we're trying to establish. Basically, it's a recognition program. It's trying to recognize those businesses that are doing things to accommodate bicycle transportation in terms of bike parking and promotional efforts, education, things of that nature. The League of American Bicyclists started this a while ago. That's the largest advocacy group in the United States for bicycles. It's based on that model, but we've kind of tailored it to this community, the Chapel Hill Carrboro community. Basically, it's a voluntary program, so we have an application process. It's 10 minutes online. They can fill it out and tell us how exactly they're doing that, and then we'd provide them with some technical assistance to improve, to enhance their efforts. And just so you know, the town of Chapel Hill actually is a bike-friendly business. The League of American Bicyclists has recognized them as such. So we're looking to roll this out in the fall, and we're also going to be applying for some grant money to do this from the Stroud Roses Foundation. And again, it would be any business that would be interested in Carrboro and Chapel Hill. I guess some of the benefits would relate to the transportation costs. It's not really expensive to provide bike parking to accommodate bicycles, and you can reduce car parking eventually if they get to that point. We're going to be providing with free advertising in a number of different ways, so hopefully it'll bring some people also to the business and patrons. And also there's a lot of evidence that, you know, people generally arrive to work happier, ready to start the day when they're outside of a vehicle. Of course, probably some of the really obvious benefits to the community are just, you know, environmental benefits, livability benefits. And we really see kind of businesses within our community as the kind of change agents as well. So we're hoping that this kind of diffuses after a while, within a couple of years, that more and more businesses decide to partake in this. And we've had some discussions recently about the status of the bike-friendly community that we live in Carrboro. We're now a silver, the only one in North Carolina. This is bringing us a step closer to gold status. So basically, we're not really seeking too much from you on this, but we just wanted to provide you with some information, see if you had any questions about the program, any comments, and, you know, we understand that probably a lot of you would support this, but, you know, we just want, I guess, an artifact of that.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you for the work you're doing. How are you going to let businesses know about this program?
We're kind of engaging in a multifaceted advertising approach. So in the newspaper, on our website, Facebook, the radio, word of mouth through businesses. We're trying to establish a relationship right now actually with the Chamber of Commerce. So we're trying a number of different avenues to get the word out.
Thank you, Seth. Thank you, Eric. I'd like to have you come and talk with the folks on the Economic Sustainability Commission and, you know, help us brainstorm ways that we could, you know, partner in making this a greater success.
Yeah, we'd be delighted to. Thank you.
All right. Sammy?
I think this is an awesome idea. I was curious to know how you were going to let customers know about businesses that are participating. Is it going to be like a sticker on their door or something like that?
So we're in the process of finding a way to reward those businesses.
Right.
With the advertising and being a bicycle kind of business, but also like an emblem maybe, something with a local artist or group in town that will be able to produce that. So we've talked to a couple people in town that would be willing to do that, and that would be part of our grant submission is to actually fund some money.
And I feel like
on the bike rack or something that they can mount in their store or something visible.
Mm-hmm. And I also feel this is a great opportunity to synergize with our town goal of encouraging locally owned businesses. There are chapters of Business Alliance for Local Living Economy, for example, is a network nationally, and they have aspects that deal with renewable energy, alternative transportation, you know, sane waste systems. So this very much fits within those kinds of programs. So I think you have a partnership with the town, and as Randy was pointing out, the Economic Sustainability Commission is one, but also the Economic Development Department is another. So thanks for taking the initiative on this.
All right. Lydia?
Yeah, I was going to say another potential partner, you mentioned the town of Chapel Hill, might also be the Chapel Hill Carver school system, the various schools. If they're, I'm not sure if they'd be able to meet the criteria or not, but they could work toward it or understand what it is. But that effort also might engage, you know, a lot of the kids to, you know, ride bikes to school too.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Item.
Sorry, did we
okay.
just. There's actually one more if you.
All right, it's getting late.
I know. This will be
don't cringe, just go quiet.
Sorry, just another initiative we're trying to take on here. Something our group has been interested in for some time and are trying to put together some efforts towards is an open streets project in Carrboro. And we not only want to update you on where we are, but get a little bit more than just comments, but maybe some support as we move forward through the summer and y'all go on break. And I don't think this is a brand new issue with the board. It's actually something that's been brought up by other board members, people in our community for sure, about closing a street somewhere in Carrboro and opening up to the folks for something other than car travel. So what we want to do or what we envision is just an open street. Some people might hear it as a ciclovia, and it's been done in other countries throughout the world and other cities in the United States for many years now. And it's just an opportunity to, again, let people engage in activities and recreation in the street other than car travel. We would like to open West Weaver Street to people. About 4 hours is what we're thinking. And this is all kind of up for discussion and debate. We're trying to do this possibly in the fall of this year and are considering a Saturday or Sunday, and knowing that both Saturdays and Sundays have their goods and bads associated with them. But overall, the focus would be, like you can see, health, family, and fun focus and recreating the streets or using recreation. So cycling, art, yoga, games, music, any of these things are open, I think, to discussion about what we can do. And it could be as simple as letting people do what they want, using chalk on the street or using art to something a little more complex and more structured. But I think it's something that many citizens would benefit from. Putting on the event is not cheap, we know, and have got some estimates from the town that we would need several volunteers, which the CBC or the Carbo Bicycle Coalition would be willing to put forward. We'd also need Public Works and Police for sure, and they've estimated about $2,700, I believe, for a four-hour event. So we would be the group trying to fund this, and we're trying to apply currently this month for a grant through Performance Bicycles, who's trying to get this created all throughout the country. And since Performance is in Chapel Hill and this community is within the Performance area, they would be willing to possibly fund this project.
We've already kind of asked or started the questioning for local businesses, knowing that there's so many businesses on West Weaver Street that might be affected, both good and bad. So we have put forward a survey. We've individually gone to each business owner and given them a survey to get their feedback, and have got some feedback, not all, but the stuff we have has generally been okay. Most businesses are closed, definitely on Sundays, most on Saturdays. Most businesses are indifferent. Some have shown some significant support, and I've also spoken to the market, Sarah, with the market, and she's shown support as well, especially during the fall when parking is less of an issue for the market. So I think there's lots of potential for businesses to actually benefit from this, but we know that's something that the board always considers. So things we would like for you all to at least give us feedback or think about is whether you would have preferences on Saturdays or Sundays, and really start thinking about the benefits and the cost of those things. We've listed a couple. I know there's many more here than we have listed, but what we have considered is Saturday being with the market a great opportunity for, we already know, a large amount of people coming to Carrboro in the fall to participate in this, people that might not already know about this. The Carrboro Bicycle Coalition would obviously do a lot of advertising along with local businesses, hopefully, if this happened. But this would be another great avenue to get folks from other cities that might come to the market to participate in this. Just as an FYI, Durham has done this for over 4 years, and they've done it in several locations and have great success. And I'm coordinating with the coordinator. I'm coordinating with the folks who do this in Durham, and I'm trying to get some more ideas as to how we can make it a success in Carrboro. I think what our group wants to do is to make sure that the Board of Aldermen are in favor of this before we move forward with any grants or any other planning, because as you can guess, this is going to be a lot of coordination with not only businesses, the town, the police. But it's going to take a lot of man hours. And before we move forward, we wanted to get your support.
Well, I think it's possible for us to give you some preliminary feedback that the, you know, ultimately, I think when a closing of a street is involved, there ends up being an agenda item at some point, some formal vote, all the way at the end of the process, after you've done all those logistics.
Yeah.
And you know, so we can't jump ahead to that part right now because we don't know all the logistics. So, but
we would, of course,
board members
want to
give some feedback about whether it's
a
subject you're interested in. Then, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think this is a great idea. The idea, if it's on a Saturday, to be able to connect Weaver Street Market with the farmers market, and they're already, you know, a lot of people have foot traffic and bicycles on that road anyway. So to open it up and really encourage folks to use the street in a different way, this part of town doesn't really have so much public space. So it's a way to achieve that too. So really open it up at least once a week, or maybe once a year.
Let's start with once a year.
So. And I appreciate your connecting with the businesses, too. That's an important factor. And my understanding is that this has drawn a lot of business to businesses in other areas. So there's an opportunity there. And I would encourage you to connect with all the alternative health industry, the yoga and the massage folks. That road is full of them. And so it would be a great opportunity to really bring them onto the street and have them share what it is that they do. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is awesome. If you need a yoga teacher, okay. Totally. And I think Saturday is great in combination with the market as well. I think that's a good, people going to the market or coming from it to come to the street. It's radical to be in the street and not in a car.
Yeah.
Sort of taking it over, people wonder what's going on. So
yeah.
Thanks for your work.
Jackie.
Just a notion. Saturday, it might cause some confusion for people coming to the market in cars. Mm-hmm. And there may be some concern on the part of the farmers at the market.
Mm-hmm.
It might be possible to look at having an extra day, you know, so that it could be on Sunday and closed down the street, but that if people wanted to come to the farmers market, if farmers wanted an extra day, then they could have that. And so it could be increasing business as opposed to hampering business.
Right.
And create, you know, we could encourage the other shops along Weaver Street to kind of stay open for an extra day, you know, or have a special brunch.
Right.
Just a notion. I don't know if the logistics are possible, but it may be worth playing with.
I think it's a great idea, and I just wanted to comment that we would always keep not only this board involved, but all the businesses involved, whoever wanted to be part of that planning process, we would definitely keep it open.
Highly trust you, Eric. It's
Randy.
I love it. And I would ask you to also add dance to that and
absolutely
talk to the folks at the Arts Center.
Mm-hmm.
Mary Nork has just started the Carborough mm-hmm Modern Dance Group.
Yeah.
So there's lots of other groups that would, be more than happy to be involved and I know that they are involved with programs like that.
Make sure you check the football schedule.
Absolutely.
And the road race schedule.
But you do need to do the grant first.
Just to complement Jackie's point of Sunday, it is a great opportunity to maybe, if not the farmer's market, even a flea market, you know. But Sunday at Weaver Street Market is huge, so mm-hmm you could really push people to go into, and then we'll maximize the use of the town commons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have
different
to say, Saturday sounds very problematic to me, but yeah. Anyway. Well, the point is that this is being referred to the staff, so we'll hear more right about it later. Must you? Go ahead.
Thanks, I must.
Must fair, everybody. Let's go.
Say something about
I only have to because you did, because I'm going to weigh in for Saturday, because I think the number of people that are already in town on Saturday, I mean, I've long thought that we should close West Weaver Street every Saturday and have a yoga and craft fair and get people moving from the farmer's market downtown back and forth and create a better synergy than we have now. So with that said, I'm going to make a motion that we hereby encourage them to move ahead with this and to work with town staff so that at the soonest possible time we can have it before us again for a decision to close the street.
We'll second.
Been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed. Matter passes unanimously. All right.
Thank you.
Agenda item C is the consent agenda, which I'm going to give you a very brief synopsis of. We have minutes from June 5th and 12th. We have a request to approve vehicle and equipment financing, a budget amendment to receive certain donations, authorization for the town manager to execute an agreement with the People's Channel, request to approve designation of fund balance for fiscal year 11-12, budget items not yet spent or encumbered, a monument application for an individual, a consideration of a request for Orange County Board of Elections to host early voting for November 2012 at Town Hall, and award of construction contract for 11-12 street resurfacing project. Is there a motion?
I'm moving the items, and maybe everyone saw my minutes. I had one small correction I sent out.
So all right, so it's been moved with the minute correction, seconded.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Right, the matter passed unanimously. That brings us to item D2, adoption of the fiscal year 2012-13 budget. Mr. Manager, do you have anything to add about your budget?
No, Mr. Mayor, members of the board, it's the same as what you've seen. Just a real quick synopsis. The recommendation is that the board take following actions for the ordinance to adopt the budget, the resolution to adopt the classification and pay plan, the resolution approving a 3% across the board cost of living adjustment, approval of the reimbursement resolution, a resolution for approval of the town attorney's contract, as well as a resolution for miscellaneous and fees, charges, schedules. No significant changes to that.
All right. Is there a
more motion? I'll move items A through F, I believe.
Can we do those all at once?
Is that right? Attorney, one motion.
Yeah,
one motion's okay.
Second.
A through F has been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, matter passes unanimously.
I think I speak for the board, which I never do, but I speak for the board in saying that we really, really appreciate the work that David and Arch and everybody put into making
all
this happen.
Departments.
So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, staff.
Yeah. All right.
That's called right. Hit the pavement running.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Item D4, a resolution making appointment to the OWASA Board of Directors. Does somebody have a motion?
I'd like to move that we appoint Steve Deere to
second.
The OWASA Board of Directors.
It's been moved and seconded that we appoint Steve Deere to the OWASA Board. All those in favor of the motion?
Can I make a comment?
Sure.
I guess the comment I want to make is, I mean, I have nothing at all against Steve. I mean, I think he'll be a fabulous representative, and it sounds like maybe board members are going to vote in favor of him. I'm just a little bit, I've been out of town all day, and it's hard to come in and be catching up on a lot of things over the last 2 days that have flown around by email and different things, and I would just like us to kind of try to maybe kind of reconsider a way that we can find out about matters that are kind of important like this at the very last minute on the night of an agenda. I mean, I was prepared to come in and vote in favor of Mr. Morgan, you know, because former town manager, pretty experienced with the loss of matters, and it wasn't even until I got in here tonight and saw Steve had applied, and Steve would be a great candidate also.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to throw it out there. I mean, I think whoever gets voted on, it's fine with me, but I think we might want to look at the way we kind of have chance to kind of think about these appointments and contemplate them a little bit better.
Randy said that as soon as we sat down about the 11th hour appointments, and I want to thank Bob for applying, and I hope that he applies for, there'll be another opening not too long, and there are other positions coming open that I think Bob would be great on. And I hope Bob doesn't take this as any reflection of our opinion of his service, because he certainly was a very, very good town manager, and he's a very talented person, and I look forward to other applications.
I think that being said, that I do have the same kind of concerns in our process, but I think going forth beyond today, we need to look at how we deal with 11th hour. But at this point, I mean, since we hadn't discussed it before, I'm more than comfortable with Steve's application. I really like his qualifications.
And I'm just going to stick with Mr. Morgan, only for those reasons, not because I don't think Steve's entirely qualified. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Okay. All right. It's been moved and seconded that we appoint Steve Deere. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed?
Aye.
Matter passes 6-1. All right. That brings us to, are we skipping D5 or not?
We're not.
We're not. No.
We're not. All right. D5. Is there a motion?
I'd like to move that we appoint the two people that are named there. That we appoint Sarah Luddington, and I'm sorry, I'm lost.
Ramchandra Thavala.
Yes.
Second.
Thank you.
All right. It's been moved and seconded that we appoint those two applicants. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? And passed unanimously. That brings us to item D6, Affordable Housing Review Meeting for Claremont South. Mr. Manager?
Marty? Executive staff.
Traditionally, there's not a staff report per se. I'm certainly happy to answer any questions. Otherwise, I believe Adam and Omar both are present and prepared to speak with you.
Okay. Mr. Zinn?
Marty, do you have a slide of the most recent concept plan?
I do not have a concept plan here. I have it upstairs.
It's okay. It's okay. It's not essential. So tonight, as required, I'm here to speak about the Claremont South major modification, specifically on the eastern tract. And the fact that, hey, Marty, would it be possible for you to get that slide? Do you mind? I think it would, just to illustrative purposes. Okay. Just so, you know, visually we have an idea of what we're talking about here, because not everyone has seen this.
Should we do our next item quickly while we're waiting on that?
Well, yeah. What
we have maps.
Do you need one of these?
Yeah, those are not the one he's
referring to. Okay.
We're talking about the latest version.
Yes.
Well, but then. Are you looking for something that's showing the school? Or showing a possible school that is today?
Showing the apartments.
The multifamily.
Not this. Right.
Which is not at a school on.
But it's okay. I mean, it's as long as we show the parcel of land, I think that's fine.
The parcel of land?
Yeah, I can kind of mouse around it. Site plan would be great. Yeah, love that. Right on the right. Okay. Okay, great. Thanks, Marty. Okay, thank you for your time. So, what we're talking about is leaving this existing property as is and modifying this property, as most of you have heard, with a small commercial site, a school site, and a multifamily site right here. So tonight I come before you to explain why we're not looking to continue to build approximately 15% land trust houses. And as I've said to you before several times, the land trust model for us right now, specifically in this market, is not sustainable. So we have the other option in the town of Carrboro of building 25% size-limited housing. And in our multifamily component, which would sit right over here, that's exactly what we're planning on doing. We would be interested in, right now we have approximately 25% of the units, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, it's somewhere around 22, 24 units right here, which are part of the whole 92-lot subdivision, and we'd like to maintain some size-limited units over here, but due to the fact that we'll be having additional multifamily over here, take up some of that size-limited capacity with the multifamily component. And, you know, I know a lot of people are here to speak tonight about, you know, reasons why this project shouldn't occur. A lot of people have already made up their mind. But ultimately, one of the benefits that I will address while I'm up here is the fact that none of these two parcels currently meet the new Jordan Lake stream water requirements.
You need to restrict yourself to talking about the housing.
Okay.
All
right, Dan.
Thank you.
All
right.
So the multifamily, I guess that's it, Dan. You're right. The multifamily will stay right here, and we're looking to combine our size limited along with our multifamily this location.
So where the multifamily would go, how many dwelling units or you have? That shows single-family lots in the same location?
Yeah, we don't have the appropriate concept.
No, that's fine. But approximately how many lots does it, I mean, you know, is it occupying a footprint similar to, what, 6, 7, 8 of those lots or what?
Right now, Mark, we have 92 units right here, about 55 right here, about 37 right here. And this is approximately, this area right here is approximately 14 acres. The area of multifamily in this location, which will be somewhere between 70 and 80 units, will occupy approximately 7 to 8 acres.
Okay.
And the footprint's the same. You keep in that area. The footprint.
Yeah,
the
footprint is the same. I mean, we're basically using the same area here, except for we're not building single family. We're creating multifamily, a school site, as well as a commercial site right here.
it doesn't extend further?
No, right now, as it's designed, it does not extend further. That's correct. The new stormwater, the new stream buffers will actually reduce the stream buffer and shove it further to the east slightly. But new stormwater rules are more stringent, and that they haven't been finalized yet. But I know they're a required payment in lieu because most people don't meet stormwater requirements.
Are you saying that the stream buffer is going to be reduced?
I'm sorry, I got us on the wrong topic. I'm sorry.
So,
I'm sorry.
Well,
okay.
Not by my account, Sammy, but it will be. But right now we're not planning on extending into that area.
We'll hear about stream buffers when the full application comes.
That's correct.
When and if.
Well, right. In terms of the size limited you're proposing, you're actually going to provide way more than 25% size limited.
That's correct.
Is that right? You're going
That's
way
correct.
Over that threshold.
I'd say that most of those units would be under the 1350 threshold.
It's something that this board has discussed before, but of course the whole policy, our whole system, our whole policy would for example, if somebody were building a development similar to like Cedar Court, which is over here on North Greensboro Street, it's 50 or 60 units. They're all 1,000 square feet. But if that were a private developer's proposal, the ordinance essentially doesn't require them to do anything special on this front. Is that right? I mean,
yes, they would have to kind of codify within the plans that X number.
They would have to enumerate or identify which units specifically were intended to meet the ordinance requirement. But I do understand what you're saying. They effectively would.
They would show on there this unit never to be expanded beyond X square feet or something like that, just
correct.
So people don't add a fifth story or something. But that's relevant to know in this context. Let me ask you one other question, MR. You know, at the one possibility. That I would like to ask you whether you would be willing to consider the possibility of working with a low to moderate income housing tax credit developer such as DHIC or a similar entity if they were interested in buying that component of it to do some type of tax credit development so that we could still have more of an affordable housing component to this development. Is that something that you'd be willing to consider?
At this point, that's not something that we're interested in, Mayor.
Okay. All right.
How much is your memo in this about the modification request, how much is the market rate price or would it be for these size limited? Is it different than what you proposed before when the size limited were just on the, I guess that's the west side?
On the eastern
you
track.
Have size limited on both, right?
Yes.
Yeah, more
so,
on that on the
so,
east side.
So we all of our size limited is concentrated here and some here and some here, but all on the western track. It's the western track. Now we're talking about reducing some of the size limited here. So if there were 60 units here, there would be 15 size limited units here, 25%.
25%.
And if there are, 80 here, there would be 20. I mean, all 80 would be size limited, and they wouldn't be expanded, but
they'd be designated as size limited.
20 would be on this side right here.
And what do you know? What this would be the market price?
Right now, we're still part of this has to do with financing, bank financing, as to whether or not we're interested in building multifamily or townhomes, condos, just in terms of a community owning its land and jointly. From everything I've heard and everyone I've talked with, that's a difficult financial hurdle to accomplish. So it's either going to be townhomes or multifamily, and the multifamily in that case would be rentals.
Okay.
Okay.
So can we just summarize? You're increasing the density, and you're going to have more size limited, but there's a designated amount that's going to meet the proportion required for this increase in density.
Correct. There's approximately 37 single family here. There'll be no more single family units over here. There'll be approximately 70 to 80 multifamily units. They'll be smaller in size, smaller in the total number of bedrooms, but overall there'll be somewhere between 35 to 40 more total units. This is 92. Now we're up to around 135, somewhere like that. So we are increasing the density. This PUD currently allows everything that we're proposing in its current zoning. We're not looking at rezoning anything.
Okay.
The townhomes or apartments that you're talking about on this side, would they be two-bedroom or three-bedroom?
They'd be mostly two-bedroom. There'd be some one-bedroom and some three-bedroom, but mostly two-bedroom.
Omar, am I remembering correctly that you didn't require a rezoning initially for Claremont South either? Is that correct? That
Claremont South did require...
Well, once Claremont 2 and 3 or whatever. Claremont, did we rezone at one point?
Claremont South required a rezoning from R15, R20, R15/R20 to R10.
Okay.
To get the number of units within the PUD. I mean, we actually had four less units. We had 96 units initially, and we moved down to 92 units, but we had to do the rezoning specifically for the PUD.
Okay, that's right. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. We may have some more questions for you in a few minutes.
All right.
I'm going to hear from a couple of people who are signed up to speak on this.
Thanks, yes.
The first person signed up is Rob Watson. If you have something to say on the affordable housing component, please come up. And then Lori Gershon.
I'm not a lawyer. I didn't really understand very much at the beginning of the meeting. Part of me being here is to try and understand the process. I'm a Carver taxpayer, and I want to basically comment on the Claremont South development plans. First of all, I thank the Alderman.
Well, let me ask you. I mean, we're really restricted here to hearing just specifically about issues relating to the affordable housing component of the development. So you may continue, but I want you to focus on that issue.
Thanks. I've got really two points to make. One. I want you, as the board and the mayor, to give due diligence to this process. And the second part, I want to make sure that the developer is transparent in all this development. The first part, the due diligence, this is very dense new development plans that were just discussed previously. Originally, in 2009, there were 96 dwellings with community home trust housing. In 2012, there was modifications. They dropped the community home trust housing, added commercial property. I think from what he's heard just now, we're not having 96 dwellings, we're having 135 dwellings, including a large number of rental apartments, up to about 80, having additional commercial space, plus or minus a school, plus or minus parking. This is a very dense development. And it's only been able to do because of his offsetting density against the separate original Claremont development over the road. The second part about transparency. The developer, and he is obviously the de facto homeowners association until all the development is developed, told us about these plans. We were not told about this meeting. The meeting's changed on the agenda on several occasions up to this. Please ask the board to tell, or how do we know how this development is going to be developed. I know I'm time limited. This is not a retrial of the case for Claremont South, but this is not the original plans for Claremont South, nor are there, I believe, modifications to the original plans. This is a new development. I know I've got little time. I hope the Alderman and the Mayor continue to believe in the development goals set out in Carolina Vision 2020. Thanks.
Right. Thanks. Lori Gershon and then Roel Daniels.
Good evening. I'm Lori Gershon, and I'm a resident of Claremont. I guess you call it north across the street. And I've been a resident of Claremont for approximately 3 years. And I want to tell you why Claremont works. Claremont works because it's an integrated community where single-family homes and affordable homes through the Community Home Trust as well as attached townhomes sit side by side in a beautiful area that fits organically within the environment that surrounds Bolin Creek. Claremont Phase 2, as it is now proposed, is the antithesis of that. What started out as 37 single-family homes, which included affordable housing, now crams in 80 multifamily homes, a school for 750 students, plus approximately 100 faculty and staff, in a 20,000 square foot commercial space. That's two stories.
Mark, excuse me.
Yes.
Mark, can we keep the speakers on the affordable housing?
You do need to focus on the affordable
and
housing.
And I appreciate that. Okay. Now, so this
how is this the parking
related?
Because this is all on a mere 14 acres. And I want you to look at this because it's not integrated. It is not part of the residential area. It is segregated to the commercial use of the community. And affordable housing does not mean putting the poor people in a warehouse of apartments with the commercial side of the development. Now, over the past 2 months, this proposal has changed radically. Last week, the agenda item was for you to consider whether this should be expedited. This week, it's whether it should be affordable housing. Back in April, and I will refer you to the staff report that's dated April 17, 2012, on page 10, intended use of the commercial space. I will quote, there is no, quote, active plan for the commercially zoned portion of the site. Therefore, the current and ongoing use of this portion of the site shall be single-family dwelling, end quote, 2 months ago. I appreciate that you are faced with these difficult decisions as elected officials. And I would just ask that you look at this carefully and remember what it means to have affordable housing. It doesn't just mean someplace that you can afford to pay the bills. It means to give everybody a chance to live in as a beautiful part of Claremont that I get to live in. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Roel Daniels and Kristen Capone.
Raul Daniels. I'm a resident of Claremont as well. I've lived in the Carborough area for about 14 years. I'm a business owner locally, and I won't be as eloquent as my neighbor, but I do want to impress upon the Board of Aldermen the need for transparency in the process. I'm concerned that there's an artful use of technical loopholes to change zoning to then open up opportunities to further change the density without appropriate review. I'm mostly concerned, though, about the increased traffic on Homestead.
How you need to relate your comments to the affordable housing specifically.
Yes. The dense population in the housing, multifamily housing, and I believe they will be apartments. The Zins have already mentioned that they will own several of these for rental property. I believe that this will attract a larger volume of traffic on Homestead, and there'll be an increase that Homestead cannot handle. I'm concerned about the large parking lots associated with the affordable housing, which will be apartments, and the effect on Bowling Creek. I enjoy that environment quite a bit. My family and I enjoy it. I know all of us in this room do. I'm ultimately concerned that this is going to change the environment into something that it was not originally intended for. Just on the eastern end of Homestead, the apartments, the retreat apartments, were up for consideration, the student housing project. And I am very concerned this is what this will ultimately turn into and not really be as it was intended for those that are have challenges with income.
Thank you, Mr. Daniels. All right. Kirsten Krepnell, and then Dennis Haynes.
I respectfully decline speaking at this time, and I will address the board when it's more appropriate.
Thank you very much. Dennis Haynes. We can always take written comments on any of this, please. We'll make sure we incorporate them into record. And let me say, while this gentleman is coming up, Mr. Haynes is coming up, that I appreciate that maybe at some point the sort of title or of this agenda item was changed. I want you to understand that sometimes we are pressed. In June for we only have so many meetings before we typically go on a break for most of July and August. So our agenda is a crowded agenda tonight, partly because of that, because we're trying to work a lot of things in. However, I want you to be really clear that we're still talking about the town of Carrboro, and that in terms of transparency from your town government, you absolutely can expect that. And we're going to be really clear about when future meetings happen that are on the more detailed aspects of this proposal. Until Mr. Zinn puts his formal development application in, though, it's impossible for us to say when exactly those meetings will be. But, we will definitely be in touch, and there is a formal notification process for all property owners within, I believe, 1,000 feet of this site as well. We make it a regular matter to be in touch about any future public hearings on this site with the Homeowners Association listservs, email listservs in the vicinity. So I am very optimistic that you will have plenty of notice about when the time arises for.
I guess I do have one quick question. I'm sorry.
Yes.
If we have not been given.
She'll have to come.
Wait. Just say it.
If we have not been given notification up to this point, how can we trust that we're going to get notification? I
don't know how you can trust that other than by the experience of having it happen. You're welcome to anybody who has a specific interest in any agenda, any particular agenda item, can let the town clerk know. We also maintain an email list for notification related to any particular topic. So,
Mark, can typically can don't give notice
for review.
Affordable housing review.
This phase of this hearing is not something that normally requires the same type of notice that I was talking about in terms of 1,000-foot notifications. That will happen in connection with a public hearing on the full development.
Once there's a formal application for a modification of the CUP by UDO and also by state law, there's required to be notice to surrounding property owners, notice in the newspaper, and Carrboro's own ordinances require even greater notice than the state regulations would require. So notice will go out when that time comes, but it hasn't come yet.
The developer isn't obligated to let us know that?
The developer is actually the party who supplies the notifications that we mail out, yes.
Right.
So it developer carries the burden on that. Yes, sir. I'm sorry to keep you waiting.
Thank you for clarifying that.
I'm sorry. I was recognizing
Mr.
Haynes.
Thank you, Mayor.
Hold on. I was recognizing Mr. Haynes.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Mr. Haynes.
Thank you for letting me speak. With the increase in affordable housing units, it seems to me that one of the things that's missing through all of these different changes to the zone is what's the baseline that the different roads can handle so that you know that as I know you get data that says Homestead will increase by 200 cars an hour or Stratford will increase by 100 cars an hour, but what's the design amount of traffic that those roads were originally intended to handle so that there's a baseline for purposes of decision-making, so that decision-making is based on some type of data and not just connector policy or affordable housing density, et cetera. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
We'll take that into account. Thank you, Dennis. Diane Robertson and then Julie McClintock.
I think my comments probably are better heard when we discuss the actual application.
Right.
They have to do with the school and in lieu of.
We will get to that issue probably this fall. Thank you. Julie McClintock.
Good evening. Julie McClintock for Friends of Bowling Creek. So I was going to give this to you under petition time or comment period as a kind of for your information. I think it's good background information to keep in mind for your affordable housing discussions, but I can't say that the environmental is directly related, so I would like your permission to just make a few points as background. Is that all right?
I'm going to stop you when you get too far from the relevant topic. How about that?
All right. As you know, Friends of Bowling Creek's mission is to protect Bowling Creek watershed, which has been identified by the state DWQ as a 303D impaired stream. Carville and Chapel Hill have received EPA grants to improve the health of the creek, and our community greatly values this natural treasure. And as you know, coming up, there are some more Jordan Lake standards to be met. And Carville is in the Upper New Hope subwatershed that has the largest nutrient reduction requirements.
Okay.
So here's a point that's kind of interesting I wanted to raise to your attention. While detailed plans have not been submitted, Friends of Bowling Creek is concerned about the administration of the stormwater calculations.
I'm really concerned that you're putting us in a vulnerable legal position. That this is not a public hearing on that project. This is.
I'm not talking about that project. I'm talking about any project. I just have a point to make on your administration for this. A few years back, you offered developers incentives to do commercial development, and current policies would not require the developer to do sizing and stormwater calculations until after the permit is submitted. So this is a general thing, Jackie. I'm not.
Well, but how does it relate to the affordable housing?
Well, I was going to make this statement at the beginning as a citizen. So if you don't want to take citizen comment, then I guess I can come back another night. But I thought that you all were prepared to take citizen comment, and that's why I signed up under petitions.
I see. Well,
I just have one or two points, further points to make, if that be all right.
This isn't about Claremont at all.
It isn't. No, it's about stormwater and keeping in mind what.
I can't. Well, you can't hear it right now. Then
you can't. All right.
I appreciate.
I'll send you written comments.
Thank you, Julie. All right. Is there any further discussion that members of the board want to have with Mr. Zinn about this issue, about the affordable housing component of this development? Yes.
Just I have one question for one of the points made by one of the speakers was the question of basically the spirit of inclusionary zoning of having affordable housing next to more affluent housing. Could you speak to that in this project and what you're proposing? Are you going to be segregating the affordable housing?
According to what I've discussed, we're planning on having size-limited housing here and size-limited housing over here, so it won't be segregated. I also just like to respond to the allegations of lack of transparency, even though I know it's not directly on the affordable housing topic. This is an issue that people have raised. I feel like somehow residents have gotten in their mind that we were coming here this week or next week to seek approval of this project. And there are many people who are not familiar with the process in Carborough, which is a long and lengthy and very scrutinized process. All of the stormwater will be calculated. All of the impervious surface will be accounted for. People still do not know at this point even how we're planning on handling stormwater, whether it be impervious concrete, subsurface retention, recycling of water for flushing toilets.
And so we're not going to get into it.
Okay. So I just want to say that, you know, I'm sorry that people do feel that there's been a lack of transparency, but ultimately my brother and I will be sending out a letter shortly to explain the process, to explain where things are at. But ultimately I felt that through this entire time that we've tried to be nothing but transparent and clear with what our intentions are. So we still do not know whether or not we're going to be building townhomes or apartments. That is still not decided. Yet somehow somebody knows what our plans are. Okay, a lot of it has to do with bank financing, which is a little bit different these days. So I just wanted to clarify. I'm sorry to get off topic.
No, that's okay. It's not, you know, it's not completely off topic. And I think you'd be wise to try and open up some new ways of talking with or meeting with residents in the area. It seems clear to me that there's a lot of kind of miscommunication or people making assumptions on different sides, and that there would be a significant opportunity for sharing some more information.
Yes, but I am here tonight because this is required.
I
understand
that.
Come here before you to discuss affordable housing.
Absolutely.
That's all I'm here to do.
And that's all we're here to, that's the problem we're here to deal with tonight. Okay, I have one last person I want to hear from, just walked in, Robert Dowling.
Sammy, did you get your question answered?
I heard that they're going to be mixed alongside more expensive units. And so this being a review, you know, I'm supportive of that and hope that...
That's not what we heard.
He said there's going to be size limited on this side, and there's going to be size limited on this side also.
I have a comment on that, too, but let's hear from Robert.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I apologize for my casual attire. I wasn't planning to be here tonight. You know me. I show up in jeans, but I was at home watching on TV, eating my pasta. And I just felt...
You interrupted your dinner.
We're
so glad you're here.
I felt that I needed to come down and just point some things out.
Good for you.
As you all know, I do affordable housing. And we don't make comments on development applications, good or bad. Never have, never will. That's not my role. My role for this town is to make comments about affordable housing within developments. And as you all may recall, Claremont South originally was approved with, I may have my numbers a little bit wrong, I think that by right number of units they could do was 75. And they made use of the density bonus, and I think they went up to 92,
yep,
something like that. All one of those numbers. But there's a quirk in the town's ordinance that said of those extra, I think it was 96, 75, 96, of the extra 21, 15 of them had to be affordable. 15 of the additional 21. Even back in 2003 and 2004 when the real estate market was very strong, I don't think, and I'm not privy to the numbers, I don't think you can make enough money on 6 additional market rate units to make up for the losses you'll incur on 15 affordable units. That never made sense. And I think I've said that to you all before. And I don't think Adam and Omar realized what they had agreed to. And so they had to come back and change it. Because financially it didn't make any sense. They couldn't do it. No one would do it. And so they came back and they said, we can't do the affordable units. We're going to do the size limited units, which is what the ordinance requires. The ordinance says you have to 25% size limited, or you can do 15% affordable. And they came back earlier this year, I believe, to do 25% size limited units. And now they're changing it again. So I have no comments about what they're doing here. It made absolute sense that they made that change because financially they couldn't afford to do what they agreed to do. My point, I'm putting down my fork and quickly taking my shorts off, putting my jeans on, taking my t-shirt off, putting my nice shirt, is to point out that in June of 2009, I came before the board and said the affordable housing ordinance needs work. In the fall of 2010, I think I came back and said the affordable housing needs work. I think sometime in 2011 I did the same thing. I lose track. This epitomizes what I was talking about. They're doing exactly what the ordinance allows them to do with regard to affordable housing. I have no comments about anything else. But from an affordable housing standpoint, they're not required to do any affordable housing. And they can do size-limited apartments. Apartments don't exceed 1,150 square feet typically anyway, as you pointed out, Mr. May, with regard to the apartment complex down the road. They're not required to do it. It's still a tough real estate environment. They're not going to do anything they're not required to do. They're in the business to... They need to make money. We want them to make money. We want developers to make money. I can tell you that. Because I work with developers who are not making money. There's a big tower right on the edge of town that is still very uncertain what's going to happen over there. So, I'm going to not be long-winded as I can sometimes be and just tell you that I came down here because this epitomizes for me why we need to really look at in a comprehensive way affordable housing ordinance so that the town's ordinance will be effective in generating affordable housing. Size restricted, I think, is better than nothing, and I think the town put that in place back in 01 or 02 when I was around for that, and those will be small and they'll be less expensive, but they won't be affordable. Mm-hmm. And there's no restriction on them staying affordable forever either. So those are my only comments. I appreciate your listening to me, and I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Robert, are you suggesting that we have a requirement like Chapel Hill has to guarantee?
Well, that's a discussion that I've had with the attorney who's not here tonight. So I can say whatever I want, I guess.
We'll find out what you say.
But his partner's here, so I'm not going to do that. It worked in Chapel Hill. All I can say, Sammy, is it worked for Chapel Hill for a long time before they even had an ordinance. It was just a policy, mm-hmm. and it was in place. And Mike didn't think that was supportable. And that's really all I...
Okay.
That's where it stands now.
I want to make one comment and follow up. I forget why I did this, but Robert will recall sometime last winter I had this crazy moment of digging back into our minutes back to 2009 and tracking every time that proposal that actually Robert and I kind of made together to review this ordinance, and it actually had been on the board's agenda, I think, six times between 2009 through the end of 2011, and each time it came to us with a request to take it off the agenda from staff because they weren't ready. And David will recall that I talked to him about that when he first got here, that we need to, like, get focused on that. And so I'm glad Robert's here tonight reminding us that we need to put more teeth in our affordable housing, and it may not be always requiring housing. It may be getting payments in lieu sometimes, but we need to get something back from staff so we can start a discussion on that soon.
And seven's a lucky number.
It's worth pointing out, we've had frozen staff positions in the planning department, and,
yes,
and we have,
yes.
I mean, no, it's not, they haven't been just sipping lemonade up there or anything. This is a very active department, and this is actually among a couple other things that are on, you know, a list that we've been trying to get to you for some time. Anything? I just want to add, you know, my recollection is that the last time we had this discussion, the complaint was that all of the affordable housing or too much of the affordable housing was on the far western end of the development, and that it was all going to be underneath the power line.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Now I'm hearing almost opposite, almost the opposite claim that it's not satisfactory because not enough of it is over on the western end of the development. And there'd be plenty of other issues to think about any possible future development changes at this site, but. I don't hear the developer proposing to do anything that is, from the affordable housing perspective, really notably different than what he was proposing to do before.
Yeah, thanks for being here, Robert. And you know, I don't want to see you again telling us that we're doing something that's not working. And this is not a criticism of staff. Or I know, it's totally frustrating, though, to have a formality to have a discussion about this because we have to talk about our affordable housing goal when someone's not going to meet the requirement that we have or proposed requirement that we have. And it's sort of like crazy making to have a discussion about something we know that isn't working. And I'm sure I'll see you again say that. I feel like we need to move forward with this. If it's come before the board six times, maybe seven, the lucky number, but I don't want to hear it again. And so I hope that things move a little faster and that we make some decisions related to this.
So I need to kind of say a little more about my conversation with David to make clear that Mark's suggestion that I was somehow criticizing planning staff is not the fact, because, you know, really what I was talking to David about is how we establish priorities. So it's not a question of whether there was enough staff. It's a question of what the staff worked on. And I would just point out that staff has expended a lot of time reviewing Family Dollar and CVS, which I would suggest are projects that are not the board's top priorities, and that that's worth looking at, is how, you know, how priorities are set. And that, you know, so
that raises some interesting questions that we'll have to address at a different time. But I didn't mean to suggest that you were, Dan, criticizing anybody in particular. I was just trying to clarify the overall context.
All right.
Of the context. All right. Miriam Thompson, very briefly and on topic.
What makes you think I would? I just want to say that I come to this from the point of view of children and families and workers who are unable to find affordable housing in this town. And that, to me, I haven't heard anybody before, should be the priority of this council and Chapel Hill. Student rentals, which are taking over what remains of affordable rentals, are high-end, are giving landlords and developers big profits, but they are not providing affordable housing to the people that I represent. And increasingly, our children, since I work in the school system, are being traumatized because they're being displaced. That needs to be your moral marker when you come to talk about affordable housing. And if the developer answers this, I hope I heard him right, but if a developer answers our mayor's question, would you agree to partner with another affordable housing project, and he says, no, we're not interested, then I'm a little concerned about the developer and how much more time you should spend with the developer. You're right, maybe not CVS. Yes, but maybe this developer is taking too much time as well. And finally, I want affordable housing, and I will sneak this in, not 7 acres for a for-profit charter school. So I know we're going to have that discussion later. I just want this group to know that that's not affordable housing either, and that's putting more money away. Thank you.
Thank you, Miriam.
Thanks, Miriam.
There's no particular... There's no particular proposed action, is that right, on
That's
this
correct.
At this point? So we have had the discussion, and that is what we were slated to do tonight. So I believe that brings us to item D, all the way down to D10, is that right?
D7.
I crossed that off. Oh, wait, we added it back. Bike parking. We were going to do this briefly, though.
Yeah.
Is that right?
All right. Resolution of consistency.
It's been moved for a resolution of consistency for the bike parking. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. All those opposed, matter passed unanimously.
I'll move the draft ordinance with the request that staff schedule a further discussion of the bike rack question.
Second.
Later on.
Move for the ordinance has been moved, and request for time to be scheduled to discuss the bike rack issue. And seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Matter passed unanimously. All right. Now that brings us to D10. Is that right? Request from Weaver Community Housing Association special revenue fund for sewer hookup. Mr. Manager.
Mr. Mayor, do you all like a brief staff report? Annette can do that, or?
I do want to hear it.
As the mayor said, this is a request from the Weaver Community Housing Association to allocate funding from the special from the special revenue, the Affordable Housing Special Revenue Fund, and this is specifically for the Hillsborough Road Cooperative. They are requesting, the overall project is for connection of their septic system to the Owassa public sewer. It's a $27,000 project. They're requesting $9,000 from the town. They have are raising the rest of the funds themselves through their own reserves that they have, plus fundraisers that they have proposed, and also utilizing the town's hookup agenda or opportunity. I want to point out real quickly is that the resolution as it is structured suggests that, and I'm glad that Robert's here in his jeans and his casual shirt, so that's good, but that that Robert Dowling did go out with me and we talked to the residents and looked at the situation there, and you have a letter in your packet from him recommending approval. Robert also pointed out that typically for a rental situation, as opposed to 80% of the median that the residents meet and 80% of the median income limits, he suggested a 60%. And that is the way that this resolution is structured. Devin Ross is here this evening, who is with the Housing Association I've been working with on this issue. Discussed that with him. He's got a few concerns with that. I just want to point it out so that you all can make a decision however you choose to make a decision. So,
okay. Jackie and Jackie.
I like the idea of 60%, particularly for rentals, because we want to make sure that we're not subsidizing people who have access to larger amounts of money. And I know you're not allowed to ask that, but I don't think that people whose families could contribute more or who will someday be making a lot better money should use our affordable housing monies. But I don't want to kick people out of their housing either. So maybe what we could ask would be that the 60% be grandfathered in, you know, so that new people coming in will be at 60% of median rather than, okay, you've been here 3 years, you're at 80%, go find someplace else. So I'd like to change it to have the grandfathered in. The other thing is I'm a little reluctant to allocate funds to a place that is so often such a mess. You know, I'm not kidding. That it has been really, really messy for years, which is insulting to the neighbors that live around it, and to give, it's kind of a meh to everybody. It's surrounded by some really nice houses. I don't want to feel like we're giving money to spoiled brats who take a nice property and just trash it. So I'm in favor of that, but I would ask that people have some respect for the community that's being asked to support them and clean it up. That's how I feel when my kids come home for vacation and they leave, like, you know. So I see this long list of things that people are supposed to be doing there, and it'd be nice if they, I know it's gotten somewhat cleaner, but you know, there are people that live around you who you're asking for money to meet your needs, and I think there should be some respect for the surrounding neighbors.
We'll let the applicant address that second point in a few minutes.
I have a question for Annette.
Okay. Go ahead.
You said Dev, is that your name?
Yes.
Has concerns about this, which part, the 60%?
The way that the resolution is written is that the housing, affordable housing, only rent to persons who earn no more than 60% of the median income. And currently the standard is
80%.
And he has
but what are,
grandfather it
in. I heard that part. What are his concerns, though? I guess I'm...
Well we're going to hear from him.
He's going to come up and, yeah, he'll talk about why he thinks that 80% is better for the longevity of the fund.
And another point is that in this resolution, it speaks to the WCHA, which is the management the cooperative itself. And I know that there's one of the housing units of that cooperative, Cedar Rock, had some money from the county, and they had this provision included as a condition to receive that money, but it was specific to Cedar Rock. So, and there's another co-housing, which is actually where I live, and we currently have that as a goal, but it's not a requirement. And so the question before the board is whether to include this specifically for that house or for the whole Weaver Street Co-Housing Association. And I would recommend that it be for the specific house, especially given the fact that the county has done a similar negotiation.
Yeah, it would only relate to the property we're investing in, I think, is the right answer from that perspective.
Yeah. Am I correct that this $9,000 would be the first money that the town of Carrboro has put into this? So
into WCHA, yes.
WCHA,
yes.
So
in any WCHA.
So, I mean, I think, you know, especially in the context of our previous agenda item, you know, the amount of affordable housing that's been sustained over the years by that organization, and that, you know, $9,000 that we would spend to under, you know, the express purposes of our affordable housing fund, to, you know, and it's actually leveraging another $18,000 for that sewer. I just think, to me, it's kind of a no-brainer either way, just to sustain.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, this is sort of speaking as somebody who works. I work for a different affordable housing development organization, and you do get into these situations where sometimes the amount of subsidy that you start to get into a amount of subsidy that becomes so small that you begin to wonder whether it's really worth all of the strings that come attached with it at some point. And $9,000 is getting down to that cusp, frankly, in my experience. But I think let me switch gears and ask a little bit different aspect about this project. So what this is going to be a private sewer lateral that will come underneath Hillsborough Road. Is that correct, or is it the extension of a sewer main?
No, it's a private sewer lateral.
It's a private sewer lateral. So here's my philosophical question about this is the problem. Okay, so Hillsborough Road. By the way, is there any way we could pull up a map of the area and put it up there, or could somebody maybe if somebody can pull it up on the GIS or something?
Let's see.
Marty's going to try and pull it up on the GIS, I think. But here's my point is, okay, so this gets down to a fundamental issue in the way that our community is organized. The town of Carrboro sits on a ridge, an essential part of that rib of that ridge is the root of Hillsborough Street. Or Hillsborough Road, excuse me, and Greensboro Street further north, not Greensboro Street, Hillsborough Road and Hillsborough Road, they both are called. Anyway, it sits on the top of a granite ridge. The rock underneath, the bedrock underneath that road is solid granite, and more than one person has driven themselves into personal bankruptcy by trying to drill through it. We had some nearly disastrous, financially disastrous problems with this up near the intersection of Daphne and Rainbow and all of that up there 5 or 6 years ago. It was it's exactly the same issue, which is what's underneath that road is solid rock.
Right.
The reason that this house is currently on a septic system is because it's so expensive to drill through, to bore through all of that rock. And DOT is not very cooperative about this either because, see, it'd be not so expensive to close the street for a day and go in there and blast or bore or do whatever it is you need to do to take all this rock out of the way. But DOT won't let you close that road for a day. They say instead, well, you need to come on down underneath and bore underneath it without ever closing that road. Or anyway, we've heard, I don't know, you know, you guys apparently have been looking into this more recently than I have, so maybe you've heard something different, but that's what we heard in the past. Mm-hmm. This has been an issue further down near the intersection of Dillard Street. It's been an issue further up near Daphne, near Rainbow. There's vacant, seemingly developable lots on on Daphne Court that have no sewer service that relates to all of this problem. It's part of the reason there are vacant lots there. Here's really my point is, you know, if everything were really right with the world, instead of investing $9,000 in helping to bring a private sewer lateral across to solve the problem for one, or actually I guess it's two dwelling units, it would make a lot more sense to invest money in extending the sewer main across that street. But I'm sure it's a much more expensive and difficult project. I don't know. I'm not opposed to doing this or solving this problem this way. This is probably all the money that we really have to solve the problem for right now anyway. But
you don't
it would be a little bit reassuring to me if to hear back from the staff that you will at least take a little further step back and look at this just take the slightly larger look at this issue for just a minute and ask the question whether it makes sense to solve a problem this small, if you see what I'm, or whether a solution this small really is what makes sense.
And will it really work?
Well, when I was looking at it, it really seemed very odd to me how far we were running from the manhole. But all the houses down there have already been addressed collectively. Had it all been done at one time, it would make huge sense. But they've all been individually taken care of down there, the way I saw it.
Yeah, the main is not like in the middle of the street. It's over here.
Right, it's on the other side.
On the opposite side. So they've got to go across. And all of these properties kind of have that problem. Some of them are currently on septic, and some of them have had crazy private sewer laterals that go down to mains that are over on Dillard Street. And OWASA has you know, waived and modified all their rules 17 different times because all of these properties have these, you know, weird sewer arrangements. This is the only one that's in crisis at the moment that I know of.
Well, and I think that's the key point, is that it is in crisis. And while I think the point you raise is worth exploring, I don't know that it's worth doing it.
I don't want to stop this. I don't want to stop this necessarily. I'm fine with approving this. I'm just saying, but at the same time, will y'all also just take a look at that larger issue, and if you see an opportunity that makes more sense, bring that information back to us. That's really what I'm trying to say.
Okay. Did you all still want to hear from Deb?
Yes,
well,
I do.
I have one question for Annette, and that is whether or not you perceive that there are other properties that could have this kind of issue with the septic at some later point.
Other affordable housing properties?
Or just other properties?
No, I'm curious if there's other properties that...
Here.
Along this corridor.
In that little area, Devin probably would almost be able to tell you because he is intimately dealt with every property and knowing. But I mean, my assessment when I was out there on site, he pointed to me, everybody's already gone on, and here's their lateral, and here's their clean out.
Okay. I'll hear what Devin has to say.
Devin, do you live here, by the way?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay. Just to clarify.
And to clarify that immediate question, I do believe that everybody in the area has connected via a private line. When we met with OWASA in early May or late April, they had a map. Everybody's got, like you said, kind of a crazy
patchwork.
Crazy lines just going everywhere. It is a very unique area for sewer provision, which we've learned quite a lot about. And I too have had many philosophical questions raised during this whole process as well.
Could you speak specifically to this 60%, 80% issue, how you see that as an issue?
Sure. And I believe that a solution was proposed that seems about right. My main concern reading that the other night was that historically, we have capped our incomes at 80% AMI. My concern was, of course, the immediate loss of current residents if we were to switch that cap. Additionally, I do have some other concerns, though, just about in regards to the long-term maintenance and continuity of the project. a lot of people who live at the Hillsborough Road Co-op currently make below 60% AMI. Some of us make in between 60 and 80% AMI. My concern is mainly one of transience. We find that the longer we have members around, the more our organizational memory is maintained, the more able we are to stay on top of regular maintenance. A lot gets lost every time somebody moves out. My concern is introducing something that would potentially boot out a member if they got, you know, a quarter raise or something seemingly insignificant could result in the loss of a great deal of valuable organizational memory that would hinder us in, you know, long-term maintenance concerns and just perpetuity.
So that we're having a little more meaningful discussion. 80% of area median income for a single individual is what kind of money?
And that's something I also wanted to clarify. What we're going by, when I was looking at the most recent census figures, we have available figures that are, we have area mean income for individuals, we have area median income for households.
But the area median income for households is calculated based on household size. So there's a different dollar figure that HUD publishes for Orange and Durham counties for each household size. And I guess the point I'm getting to is my recollection is that what is a single person at this point? It's 35,000 is 80%. 38.5 is 80%. So here's... If I can put on my Jackie Gist hat for just a second and say, well, why does somebody who makes $38,500 a year need public support in this location in this facility? Do you see what I'm saying?
Oh, I do, and I can clarify that's not the case. There's nobody living at the Hillsborough Road Co-op making anywhere near that much money.
Well, and that's what I'm trying to get to is, like, I don't think the 60% cap is probably as bad as you think it is.
What's the figure?
What is 60%?
What is that?
Well, it's three-quarters of $38,500. Right. It's like $30,000, you know? I don't know the exact number, but...
Oh. Yeah. Actually, you know, in that case, I mean,
see,
if anybody's
making
30 grand,
that's what I'm saying. Is like, really, there's a bunch of people who make more than $15 an hour and work more than 2,000 hours a year.
That has never been and probably will never be a problem at the Hillsborough Road Co-op, I can assure you.
Well, hopefully one day.
Hopefully one day
American incomes will be going back up. But, yeah.
Okay.
It's not family of four.
Now here's the other twist. The other twist on that is just how you go about calculating household size for the purposes of the Hillsborough Road Co-op.
Right.
And this is an issue that WCHA struggled with back over at Cedar Rock was, well, are each of the three people living in any particular unit in Cedar Rock three separate households to be evaluated separately, or do you add all of their income together and say they're a three-person household? Well, they don't qualify at all if you add their income together and say they're a three-person household. So they really end up, I believe, where we wound up with the county is agreeing on analyzing it basically room by room within a co-op.
I see.
And I think in that context, so room by room, you're talking about only one person, and you're talking about an income cap of like $30,000. None of this seems like that would be a problem.
What I wanted to suggest was that if the language stated that when someone moves in, they have to be no more than 60%, then that addresses his concern about that 25% raise that moves someone. You know, if someone goes from $15 an hour to $15.25, and they've been living there for 3 years, you know, that they can continue to be part of a stable community there.
Yeah, I think that's what I meant by grandfathering people in.
Grandfathering future people as well.
So
someone who moves in next week after we adopt this, who's making 60% and then gets a raise 2 weeks later.
Isn't forced out.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
All right.
Does that make sense?
I think that clarification and also the grandfather consideration has ameliorated my concerns.
Now, how about some good neighbor policies?
Yeah, what about this issue?
Right,
it's an
well,
issue.
It is an issue, and I appreciate that. And I think what we have been seeing around the co-op is a renewed interest in civic responsibility, cleaning the house up physically. We're digging ourselves out. But I think the properties look better than it has for a while, and we're certainly not stopping where we are. Maintenance is back on a regular schedule. We're making regular dump hauls. A lot of people over the years have thought that various things would be useful, and they brought them there for us. At this point, we're determining... At this point, we're determining that, in fact, these things don't belong in our yard. They belong in a lined landfill, and that's where they're going.
If I may observe, there have been times when the co-op has had like some special events, kind of along the lines of a yard sale or something like that, which has been fine and cool. After the yard sale's over, in some cases in the past, there's been a tendency to say, "Well, everything that we didn't sell is now free," and mm-hmm. well, why would we bother to move it from the front yard mm-hmm. for days? And I haven't seen that recently. But I think that's the type of thing that you know, it doesn't bother me. But I know that there are people who live on Hillsborough Road who does bother.
What I've noticed is that you guys have an unsightly amount of recycling.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, that's going out.
We'll forgive you on that one.
Well, you know, and here's a thought, Devin, you know, and I've always considered this. That site is a gateway for downtown Carrboro, mm-hmm. whether it's cyclists or runners. I mean, people are always coming into town or they're going wherever to the, you know, northern part of town from that corner. It's a really important corner for Carrboro. One of my former students actually lives right across the street, and he's, you know, a lifetime resident of this area, and, you know, he's bought a home. You know, folks have invested in their futures in that area. So I'm really hoping that you get the message that it's, you know, it's a place we all feel invested in and take pride in. And if, you know, if there's, I mean, I'm just going to say it, if there's help you all need in organizing, there are people to get resources from. I mean, in terms of the cleanup, honestly. A bunch of Carrboro ants will come over and tell you all exactly how to do it.
No. Yeah, well, I'm very serious because
you just
don't realize between road races and bicycle races and I mean it's a real critical entry point for Carrboro.
Mm-hmm. All right, Mark, we can take a break after we vote on this.
We're going to.
I think we should just adjourn after we vote.
Yeah, really.
All right, is there a motion?
Move the resolution stipulating that where it says no more than 60% of median income at the clause at the time that they sign their whatever it is,
the
lease agreement.
And do we have to clarify the grandfathering?
Yeah, well, that's what I just did.
Okay. That's what that is.
Is the point I made an issue with the WCHA as it's currently worded?
We need to add this.
Oh, how is that worded in there right now?
My interpretation was it was for the Hillsborough Road walking.
Yes.
So we should strike where it says WCHA in that last clause.
Mm-hmm. I have.
Okay.
I can't help myself. I have
where
one.
Where it says WCHA is requesting the town, that one?
I have one more thing. So
no, it says WCHA and the Hillsborough Road Cooperative.
Okay.
I used to be on the board of this organization long ago, and my recollection is that at some point we subdivided this lot, and that WCHA owns a vacant lot that's adjacent to the two houses.
Yes, that's 623 Hillsborough Road.
623. So now my question is this project being done in a way that will allow for the potential future development of that lot?
You know, I'd have to...
Do you see what I'm saying? Because that lot has the same issue.
Yeah. Right. I'd have to check with the... That wasn't something that was on my mind when I was working with the engineer to resolve this issue, and I'm not sure if the current plan we have would allow for expansion or the degree of expansion that would allow for.
Well, let me point this out. Owasa's position, generally speaking, is that a private sewer lateral has to go through a little bit of the public right of way and your own particular lot that it serves. Mm-hmm. Potentially, the two lots that exist now out there could be recombined at some point in the future, and a third house or a third co-op house could be built on that site. If all three houses wind up on the same lot, then I think they can all be connected to the same private sewer lateral, mm-hmm. assuming that the private sewer lateral is sized correctly to begin with. Mm-hmm. So I would like you, number one, to also look at that issue as you move forward. And number two, I'd like to clarify that if the money we're providing is going to make it possible to have a future expansion of affordable housing there, that it would apply to, mm-hmm. that this requirement would apply to that as well. So in other words,
yes.
If this is making possible the development of 623, then it also needs to wrap that in terms of the affordability requirement.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I guess related to that question is, if it is separate properties, the subsidy that we have, would it be $2,000 for each property?
Well, except that there, and it wouldn't be anything until the subsidy is only for replacing a septic system. So since the lot is vacant, there's no septic system being replaced.
Okay. There's no bathroom in that other house.
But that no.
This is a vacant lot.
There's two houses on one lot and another lot. That's what I'm getting at, is there's nothing on that other lot, so there's no $2,000 to subsidize.
I just want to point out lastly that I was very impressed by the articles and the history of what this project represents, and you know, there's this cosmetic issue, but there's this underlying foundation which really represents an inspiration for how to do alternative affordable housing. So I would want to really put that spotlight on this specific housing project, because it was the original, and all the community inspiration is provided. Myself, I work, you know, we created the Carver Green Space, and we're very inspired by the skill shares that came out of the co-op house. And so I would say the people who live there are very self-sufficient and inspiring people, I think you know, a huge asset for Carver. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The matter passes unanimously.
Oh, I'm taking
yeah, left? Okay. What else is left?
Good evening. Welcome back. It is Tuesday, June 19th, 2012, and we are reconvening our Carver Board of Aldermen meeting. I believe that there is only one remaining item on the agenda. Is that right? Which is a discussion of our retreat, which is scheduled for this Saturday. And I would like to recognize the committee members to comment.
Sure. I'm going to start, and then Jackie, if you have other things you want to add. So we've had two meetings, the committee. I just wanted to tell you all a little bit about the process. And Jackie and I and David met once, and then we met with Robin, who's going to be the facilitator. She's from Dispute Settlement Center. Andy Sachs was not available, and he highly recommended Robin. At your places, there is an agenda that's a little more fleshed out based on our discussion. You got an agenda on Friday, and it was sort of the bare bones, the topic areas, and she just fleshed out some more. It's double-sided. It says draft on it. You all have it. And we talked to her about the retreat being focused on economic development, and not only on, we want to sort of move it away from restaurants and places that businesses that have storefronts, but get an assessment and understanding of what businesses are in Carborough that do not have storefronts, that are not restaurants. And we also, I wanted to reassure the board that we wanted to focus on what was already been done through the Local Living Economy Task Force and move from there. Robin has gotten information about that. She got all the information we all got in our packet, and so I feel like she's fully prepared to move us forward. I know there are a few board members who had a few things they wanted added to the agenda, and Robin's aware we're having this discussion, so I think we still, the committee, wanted to focus it on economic development, and if there are specific things that you all want added, I think we can spend a few moments talking about that. And if you look at the notes, she has more about the context for the questions related to economic development. Do you want to add?
One of the feelings that we had was that we've done a really good job in what I think of as the first wave of creating the creative economy. You know, we've attracted the arts. We have great storefronts. We have wonderful restaurants. We have music. We have festivals. And when you look at our list of who are the businesses in Carborough, those storefronts are what appear in the list. However, mm-hmm. there are other groups, organizations now that are coming in who are the second wave, who are what we've been wanting. And that second wave includes things like RTS, the Economic Development Consulting Firm. It includes new marketing organizations that have come here. Mm-hmm. It includes organizations that are coming here with full-time professional-level jobs, not service sector jobs, but professional-level jobs. And if you talk to the people who are coming with those new organizations, they are coming because of Weaver Street and Neal's and the farmers market. And so we have done a really good job of creating the environment to attract the second wave of the creative economy. And so that was one of the things that we very much wanted to talk about as an agenda item is, who are these new folks coming in? Let's identify them. Let's talk to them. And how do we move that forward? How do we move from the second wave, from the first wave to the second wave? And that was kind of the overall theme that we wanted, keeping it local, building on what we have local, building on our brand. That's kind of the overall theme that we were proposing for the retreat.
Okay. Other comments or questions?
Well, I have two. One that I would hope that on Saturday sometime we can have a short discussion of involve David's expertise on branding. I know one of the things that when David interviewed that was very
it's
apparent.
Definitely on the agenda.
Okay, but given that today tonight we talked about the visitor center. Well, actually, we didn't need to talk about it. It was in our packet about the the visitor center and branding that Chapel Hill is going to be doing in a larger context. I would like us to kind of, you know, have some conversation with the goal in mind to be looking at how we crystallize our own branding for ourselves.
Well, I think if you'll notice here, it says, how does the town of Carver get beyond storefronts? How does the town work on branding to attract jobs and residents?
Okay. Well all
definitely on the
Jackie, what I'm saying is when I had this Friday, this is what I
this is one of the things I was thinking of.
The second thing is I'm concerned under context for questions that under the three P's, one of the things, rather than the three P's, people, planet, profit, I'd like us to center that conversation on sustainability and resilience and drop the people, planet, profit term, because one of the things that we're trying to move not only Carborough but the greater Carborough and the county.
You want to change the phrasing of that.
The phrasing and the goal towards sustainability and resilience rather than making profit the goal. And I have another item that I'm interested in discussing, but it's not on economic development. So if you want to...
What was it?
I wanted to be able to use some of the time on during the retreat to talk about communication and, in particular, very particular, how we can best manage the emails. I know it's a very picky little thing, but we end up with long threads when sometimes we need to just make the determination this needs to be an agenda item, not something that's discussed with multiple threads in email. And I certainly think for our town's administration, having a real clear set of expectations about what we're going to discuss in emails and what we definitely need to shift very quickly to an agenda item needs to be talked about.
We could maybe address that question at a work session meeting sometime this year. I mean,
I really don't want it to wait till the fall, though, because
it's possible that we could really rework this agenda in a major way. That's certainly one option, but it doesn't. I mean, as a subject, it's kind of a total add-on. I mean, just sort of glued on to the outside of what this agenda looks like. From my perspective,
I know, but it's something that's important because over the last couple of years, especially the last 2 years, the importance and the use of the emails is quite different than it was 5 years ago. And
I agree, and I also agree that y'all are bad at using email, and that we need to talk about it. I just don't think the retreat's the time to do it.
Yeah, I was going to ask if we need a facilitated conversation to do that. I mean, we have a facilitator with us all day that we're contracting with, and do we feel like we need a facilitator to guide us through that? And if you do, then we do.
Make it quicker.
It's a shorter meeting. We used to have two full days for a retreat.
We're having a half day.
And then we had a full day for a retreat, and now we have a half day for a retreat.
All right. Are there other input or whatever?
I'll just follow up on Randy's point. I think that would be a good item for discussion. I don't think probably for the retreat. It seems a little out of, this seems like it's pretty tightly focused. We only have one more meeting, then we come back. But I'd like to see it, if possible, very soon after we come back, because I do think sometimes I feel like I've missed out on entire threads of things if I am working all day and don't get to check my email. So I think I'd like to see it sooner than later when we come back, if that's possible, a discussion about that.
We could, September, at our September work session?
I don't know, because that first week in September, I don't know that I'm here. So, but all I'm saying is I want to see it early because I really,
Randy. You're absolutely right. It really is a problem, and we need to start respecting that.
Are there other suggestions or comments or questions on the agenda?
Yeah, my first question is, if we're going to be together for 5 hours, do we really need a whole hour to eat lunch? I mean, maybe that's a minor point, but it seems like we don't, and we haven't in the past. you know, it's nice to have some social time, but, you know, I don't know if we need a whole hour of it, because if I come at noon, I'll be finished eating at 12:20, and then, yeah, we can hang out.
Well, maybe we could have a review of the materials while we're eating.
Well, they will have already reviewed the materials.
You could show up at 12:40, too.
Okay, I'll do that.
Well, there's also the getting your the food isn't going to be at your place. I mean, it's like you're going into the kitchen and someone's made it for you, but you're getting it will take a little time. There's a
not a boxed lunch.
Okay, so in terms of the economic development thing, although I don't think there are different waves of economic localization, I agree with Jackie's point that there are a lot of different sectors of the economy that we need to focus on, and that was a point that was explicitly discussed at length in the Local Living Economy Task Force and is embodied in those recommendations. So my feeling is that our discussion of economic development needs to take as its starting point where we are now and what our adopted policy is. Because, you know, for me, the question of what does economic development for Carborough look like, well, you know, it means what our adopted policy is. I'm like, you know, I worked on it, and I agree with that. So I don't have much more to say about it. But, well, you know, so, for example, and I'm not saying, you know, that it's not fine to have an exercise, but I feel like, for example, you know, so we talk about branding, and we just approved quadrupling Annette's budget for Local Living Economy, including branding. And I think that we really need to start the discussion with two things. One is a presentation, you know, presumably Annette, and forgive me if I presume too much, but presumably she has some thoughts and David has some thoughts about what's going to happen in the next year, and that's just back from the Bali conference and has insights from that. So I think we need a presentation from Annette. I think that the task force report that we haven't looked at detail in at least a couple of years needs to be part of our materials, and that we need to start with
the Local Living Economy report?
Yeah, from the task force. That's right.
Okay.
And that we need, you know, a few years ago, we looked at that and we picked several priorities when we met over at the Seymour Center. Right. So I think we should have a progress report on what we did, what we've done since that retreat, what we've done basically on that report, and then really our, I think our key focus is should be what our priorities are within that structure. And, well, you know, because we've got that structure in place. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, it seems to me that, you know, and I'm trying to figure out how we do this in the night, how we kind of come to some closure on all this relatively soon, of what this agenda would look like. Would adding some sort of staff reporting, staff input component to the early part of this agenda kind of help to put this in that context?
Yeah, I think we need that. You know, my understanding is that this first question about what does economic development look like for you is intended kind of as an icebreaker sort of exercise.
You know.
And that's fine with me, but I think immediately after that, we should all be up to speed on what Annette's up to. Because like Randy and I, you know, we hear a lot from being on ESC that the rest of you, you know, maybe get bits and pieces of.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we just had a somewhat lengthy discussion last week on, you know, we sent three people to Bali, and we got report backs from all of them and some preliminary discussion on what the direction is. So ESC is also thinking about what the directions we should move in. And we need, you know, we want to harmonize what we decide with the direction they're already taking, which is, again, based on our established policy. So I guess, you know, all these questions on page 2, I mean, these are exactly the things that the task force spent over a year, what was it, Randy, a year and a half, I think, grappling with and has given us the recommendations. So what I would like to do is proceed from those recommendations, and it may be that in our discussion that one or the other of us will have ideas of things that are in the report that should be added or, you know, included in our priorities. And I think that's great, but I think we need to start from building on the work we've already done.
And I would also add two comments that, you know, the work that Annette has done in the last year and a 3 months has been outstanding to really springboard from the Local Living Economy Task Force forward. So there's discussion that Annette has had with local business folks to follow up on the February for the Love of Carborough program that I think would be really valuable for us all to hear. And one other recommendation I would make is that maybe one or two of the folks from ESC, in addition to Annette, who attended Bali, I'm thinking of Bob Sanders and Saunders, for example, because he went to two Bali conferences, and he's looking at he's reported to us once on other kinds of funding, you know, crowdsourcing and B corporations, and that's something else I think would be valuable for our whole board to hear.
We are not talking about replacing what people have done or negating what people have done. We're talking about building on it.
Yeah, that's what I just said.
Well, okay, Lydia, and then
it is.
Lydia has.
You know, I have never been the liaison to the ESC, and I feel a little bit of a disconnect with our ESC. I mean, I get the reports, I read them, but one of the number one questions we get asked in the Board of Aldermen by all the citizens and all the forums is, you know, what are we doing to increase economic development? And I, with the Visitors Bureau, we talk about it a lot. And so, you know, I think I would find it really, really helpful. I mean, I like the agenda the way it is. I do agree perhaps we need some kind of brief presentation, whatever Annette feels is appropriate, to tell us what y'all have done since the last. We all can reread the Local Living Economy Task Force report. We can all reread the RTS report. You know, we can all be up to speed, get caught up on what's been going on lately. But I really like an engaged conversation between all of us. And the other thing is, we've had retreats in the past where we had lots and lots and lots of reports and little time for talk. And I like the idea here of having a good kind of succinct kind of report as a stepping board, and then all of us being able to go on with that.
And I didn't just pull this out of my ear. This is based on conversations that I've had with members of the ESC, new members of the ESC, and members of the community who are saying it's time for the second wave. I'm sorry if you don't like that term.
I've just never heard of it before.
Well, I can actually come up with things on my own. That it's time to, like, start. These people are coming because of the storefronts and the things that exist. But in things like our economic development loans, like our revolving loan fund, that really does focus on the storefronts. And that's kind of, to the community, the face of our economic development. So this is a conversation of how to build on what we've done for the past 15, 20 years and start moving to the next step.
Okay. Well, Sammy.
I when I first read this, I felt like it was a regurgitation of a lot of thinking we've already done. But in further hearing about it, I find that it may be valuable if we do take this in context with the work we've already done, and don't come into it just reinventing the wheel. And I would encourage us to think beyond economic development. I don't recall when we had our agenda item identifying what was going to be on the agenda, but I thought it was more than just economic development. But for lack of having other interests here, I think it's still an opportunity to connect with those other interests. In other words, and when we're talking about second wave, thinking beyond retail, there are opportunities to deal with climate change through, for example, weatherization, which is shown to be a huge economic development and a generator of even better than manufacturing, for example. And I also think that well, it would be valuable to have a discussion as to how to tap in and make use of the quarter cent sales tax that the county currently has. Like, we are paying into that, and there's an opportunity for us to be intelligent about how to make sure that whoever it is that is deciding how to allocate that, because I know it's not just the commissioners, there's a board that has been set up, that we have representation for the town on that board, for example, or that we, you know, identify a plan that the county can really have a sense for what it is that we hope to be also benefiting from through that. So maybe I'm jump-starting this conversation.
No, that's great, because those are things that can come up under the next step phase of this. This is the conversation we want to be having. What are our next steps? What is our branding? That's pulling all of this together and deciding where do we go from here.
You're saying that the agenda item, that will fall within the agenda item, what, that's like 1:15 to 3:15 and or 4:15 to 4:45.
Yeah.
I see.
Like, what are our next steps? Okay. How do we move
forward? Well, I think that, that sounds, I agree, Sam. I think it's an interesting question.
But I'm really uncomfortable with the implication that we're discarding the work those citizens did for a year and a half. Well, that we've only begun to implement.
Well, I think there are two members of this board who are taking this whole conversation one way, and two members of this board who are taking it a whole different way. And I'm at a loss to find a constructive way to solve y'all's problem with one another, if you will, about this issue. I mean, I think the suggestion for some staff reports at the beginning of this is helpful and useful, and that beyond a certain point, it's sort of like, you know, if there's something you want to discuss, then you know, let's discuss it at the time that the meeting happens. But right now, you know, I feel like maybe two members of this board feel like their toes have been stepped on by something that's happened here, and then two other members of this board now feel like their toes have been stepped on, and that we're wasting a lot of time by kind of dancing around that issue.
I don't know who you're talking about. My toes haven't been stepped on. It's Tuesday, and it's where retreat is Saturday.
Everybody.
I just want to clarify what we're doing.
No, then I will say it more specifically. I feel like two members of this board are all into economic development and spend all their time with the ESC and are a little bit offended by the agenda that y'all have come up with because they have misinterpreted the intent behind the agenda.
Well, please don't put words in my mouth.
Well,
what I recommended, and I thought that's what we were going to talk about tonight.
I don't know why we're talking. I don't know what we're talking about at all, really. I'm sorry. I'm very frustrated by this conversation.
We're just going to have a full board conversation of how to build on all the work that people have been done.
But without any reference to that work.
Okay, but so that granted that was a bit of an oversight by the committee. Can we move past that? We've all agreed that it makes sense to review the work and have. I mean, at least I think we've agreed.
We did too.
Well, I mean, and I expect. I mean, I'm going to have the conversation, whether it's, and I'm sure it'll be collaborative with others. But it'll definitely be informed by having read those reports beforehand, and that. And I think the most valuable aspect of this retreat is for both Annette and for our new manager to really have a sense for where we came from when we developed those documents so we can convey and give direction to town staff on how to pursue what we have embodied through those documents.
Okay, so what specific changes need to happen to this agenda in order for us to adjourn this meeting?
We need to know that Annette is going to give us a report on what people have raised here.
Does that seem reasonably achievable to staff?
And we can do that during the lunch hour, so we're not wasting
an hour.
And we need for everyone to receive a copy of the task force report, I guess, in our packet on Friday to review before we get there so we can talk about that.
Okay. All right. I'll take that as a motion. Is there a second?
Second. Or did I move it?
I was thinking it was your motion.
Okay, second. So I won't second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Matter passed unanimously. All right. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Yes. Can we go home?
One question before we go. I forwarded this fracking letter, sign-on letter, that I hope you all saw, and hopefully you're willing to sign on. So far, there's representatives from Butner, Raleigh, Durham, Orange County, Pittsburgh. So
Can
if
we
someone sign? Doesn't want to be included, let me know. Do we want to vote on it?
Could we vote on it next week?
We can't because the governor may veto it.
I'll tell you this. I'm against fracking. Put my name on any letter that says that.
Sammy, are you signing us on? Because when I tried to go on to the governor's thing, I mean, I tried to call and everything, and it was full.
This is a
Sammy
letter.
Has moved that the governor should veto the fracking bill.
Yeah, it's a letter that I'm hoping to have y'all sign on.
Okay.
As individuals?
As individuals?
Okay.
Well, I really we can do it as a board, too.
Yes, we can.
Well, we've kind of done this.
We did.
I tried to get you to make a motion just now.
I move that we sign on as a board.
All those in favor?
I'll second that.
Opposed?
Okay.
Four individuals.
Okay. I was just...